We're going to get back into the Twitter files. Full transparency. Where I'm at, right? I don't think the things that have been released by Twitter are these huge seismic bombshells that, like, a, you know, oh my God, like, scandal of the century, blah, blah, blah. But they do confirm what we already strongly suspected or basically knew. It does point to the fact that a political party was working in lockstep and had regular meetings with a big tech company to silence certain voices, and certainly around the Hunter Biden laptop story to quash that story, despite being perfectly valid reporting that really should have been talked about before the election. Okay, I think that. And I'll also just add that if you know about Watergate and you know what Nixon was actually impeached for, it should be a big deal to journalists, honestly. Like, the Watergate scandal, basically, just to give a summary of it, a bunch of people working for the president, rather, he did it through a committee called the Committee for the Re-election of the President, got caught breaking into a hotel to put down surveillance equipment, recording equipment, on political rivals, right? And the reason, the Democrat caucus was staying in the Watergate hotel. So that is, you know, you're working with a big tech company that has access to, like, private limited information, can read people's DMs because they're not encrypted, can suppress people's voices, can make a news story go away, and you're doing that, and you've even got FBI agents working off, and you know, former FBI agents working for the company as well. I don't know, guys, like, I just long for a day where journalists could put aside political bias and acknowledge that that's probably a story. You know, just a story. Cover it as much as you want. To use the universal phrase, nothing burger, is absolutely ridiculous. It's not a nothing burger. It's a type of political scandal. Maybe not the biggest, but you don't want to talk about the other stuff neither. You don't want to talk about FTX and, you know, I mean, credit to a journalist the other day. There was a journalist asked their press secretary, will Joe Biden give his campaign donations back? And it was the old, I'll circle back and let you know. We'll discuss that. When I have something for you, I'll get back to you. Yeah. Of course, they're not going to. They're going to keep that dirty money, money that didn't belong to the person who gave it. But whatever, we're not going to talk about FTX just yet. So after the first Twitter files leak, which is what we read in the first video, there was a massive pushback, which we also talked about in that video, against the journalist that had been asked to do the leaking, Matt Taibbi. Now, Matt Taibbi, if you know his work, he's a guy who's been around for a long, long time. He did some incredible reporting around, you know, what was going on down at the Resist Wall Street movement. He has done overseas correspondence as well. He spent time in Russia, which, by the way, when you were writing about Eastern Europe and Russia, it was a good thing that you spent some time out there. Now, apparently, it's proof that you're a fucking agent of Putin, even though he did live there in 92. But anyway, he's written it like Rolling Stone. He was like one of the big, like, new wave of political editors. Obviously, Rolling Stone's always been like, had a very iconoclastic approach to reporting on politics, going all the way back to the proud legacy of Hunter S. Thompson. Matt Taibbi was one of the new guys that was kind of doing it. And, you know, he's the dude that, like, when the subprime mortgage kicked in, he's the guy that was writing about why Goldman Sachs is evil. And the quote he famously used, and I've got it here in front of me, was, Goldman Sachs is a great vampire squid wrapped around the face of humanity, relentlessly jamming its blood funnel into anything that smells like money. That's what he said. Now, what's interesting is all of the journalists that were attacking Matt Taibbi after he agreed to scrutinize the internal Slacks and emails of Twitter and put them out, all of the attacks were that he was a conservative journalist. And by no stretch of the imagination could you label this guy a conservative. And so I just wanted to play something just as a sort of, you know, it was like a response to the people that attacked him, and so you can hear Matt Taibbi in his own words. And it's not that he's a conservative; it's that he understands journalism is broken. in America. It's the only conclusion you can arrive at. And anyone who says that, all those other pathetic blue chip journals, like, will just rally round, and they will make up any lie about you to discredit you. It's their little clique. It's their little clubhouse. They'll tell the lies they want to tell, and you won't point out their lies. They'll drive a narrative that suits their goals. And if you point out that they haven't done their job properly, maybe you're a Russian agent. Maybe you're a Trump supporter. Maybe you're a white supremacist. It's become so pathetically transparent. It's no wonder that faith in the institution of journalism is at an all-time low. But they persist with the playbook, and I don't get it. So this is a speech that he gave during a debate. Oh, just before we get into it, he is wearing one of those, what I call the Madonna microphones. They are terrible for mouth noise. I've had to wear them a few times in esports myself. They pick up every little... all of that. They really pick it up because they're so close. Because the mic is designed to be held away from the, if you have beard or stubble, because it gives you that every time you move them. And the mic is super sensitive. So they're not, so yeah, you're going to get lots of Matt Taibbi mouth noise in this. But whatever, just go with it.
And I argue for the resolution, you should not trust mainstream media. I grew up in the press. My father was a reporter. My stepmother was a reporter. My godparents were reporters. Basically, every adult I knew growing up was a reporter. So I actually love the news business, but I mourn for it. It's destroyed itself by getting away from its basic function, which is just to tell us what's happening. My father had a saying, "The story's the boss." In the American context, this means that if the facts tell you the Republicans were the villains in a political disaster, then you write it that way. If the facts point more at the Democrats, you write that. If they're both culpable, as was often the case for me when I investigated Wall Street for almost 10 years after the 2008 crash, you write the story that way. We're not supposed to thumb the scale. Our job is just to call things as we see them and leave the rest up to you. But we don't do that now. The story is no longer the boss. Instead, we sell narrative in a dysfunctional new business model. Once the commercial strategy of the news business was to go for the whole audience. A TV news broadcast was aired at dinner time, and it was designed to be watched by the entire family. Everyone from your crazy right-wing uncle to the sulking lefty teenager in the corner. The system had flaws, but making an effort to talk to everybody had benefits. For one thing, it inspired trust. Gallup polls twice showed Walter Cronkite to be the most trusted person in all of America. That would never happen with a newsreader today. With the arrival of the internet, some outlets found that instead of going after the whole audience, it made more financial sense to pick one demographic and try to dominate it. How do you do that? That's easy. You just pick an audience and feed it news you know they'll like. Instead of starting with a story and following the facts, you start with what pleases your audience and work backward to the story. This process started with Fox, but really now everybody does it. From CNN to OAN to the Washington Post, nearly all media organizations are in the same demographic hunting business. According to a Pew Center survey from a few years ago, 93% of Fox's audience votes Republican. In an exactly mirroring phenomenon, 95% of MSNBC audience votes Democratic. The New York Times readers are 91% Democrats. Left or right, most commercial audiences in America, anyway, are politically homogenous. This bifurcated system is fundamentally untrustworthy. When you decide in advance to forego half of your potential audience to cater to the other half, you're choosing in advance which facts to emphasize and which to downplay, based on considerations other than truth or newsworthiness. This is not journalism. This is political entertainment, and it's therefore fundamentally unreliable. When editors, with editors now more concerned with retaining audience than getting things right, lots of guardrails have been thrown out. Silent edits have become common.
Yep.
Serious accusations are made without calling people for comment. Reporters get too cozy with politicians and report things either without attribution or source to unnamed people familiar with the matter. Like scientists, journalists should be able to reproduce each other's work in the lab. With too many anonymous sources, this is impossible. We just get a lot of stuff wrong now. In the Trump years, an extraordinary number of quote-unquote bombshells went sideways. From the P-tape to the Alpha Server story to speculation that Trump was a Russian spy recruited before disco started to false reports of Russians hacking a Vermont utility, we've accumulated piles of these wrong stories. Now, I'm no fan of Donald Trump. I wrote a book about the guy called Insane Clown President. But these stories offend me. A good journalist should always be ashamed of error, and it bothers me to see so many of my colleagues not ashamed. News media shouldn't have a side. It should focus on getting things right, which, believe me, is a hard enough job. Until we get back to the basics, we don't deserve to be trusted, and we won't be. Thank you very much.
You conservative, Trump-supporting, Russian agent doing PR for the world's wealthiest man. Now, listen, you've got to be naturally skeptical of any journalist. Objective journalism, it's kind of like the Holy Grail. There's many schools of thought now that believe it's something that can never be truly achieved, and, you know, you should strive for it, but understand you're never going to get there, and therefore the reader has to take on a healthy skepticism of anything that's reported, and blah, blah, blah. Some people, obviously in the Trump era, said objective journalism is essentially the loophole that allows a thing like Donald Trump to happen in the first place. So let's get rid of it. You know, I've done multiple videos covering the death of journalism in America, the death of the journalistic standard, and how Trump really accelerated it to a point where it's just fucking embarrassing. It used to be a point of pride. I used to tell people, I'm a journalist. I used to tell people that all the time. I used to puff my chest out. I used to think, you know, this is an important job. I won't tell them what I write about. I'll just use that. I won't tell them I write about fucking video games because I'm a man child. But I'll tell them I'm a journalist and I'm not lying. Now I just don't want to tell them that. Now I'm ashamed of the profession in its totality, particularly because American journalists, Western journalists, they just dominate the space. As you've seen in the series I do, Enemy of the People, they get so much wrong. And these are not honest mistakes. This isn't sloppy journalism, because it's only wrong in one direction. If they get away with being wrong, if they get away with lying, they will do it again and again. And if they get caught, there's like not a mea culpa. There'll be some tiny little stolid apology. The publication will say they've done great work. We by and large stand by their reporting. And we just move on to the next one. News happens so fast now as well. Back in the day, when a journalist got something wrong, you know, you think about Dan Rather and his George Bush reporting, where he didn't corroborate the validity of documents, even though he said he had, and then was later the documents were later proved to be false. The scandal around that was a news story. But news comes at you so thick and fast these days, the journalists know the game is rigged in their favour. You haven't got time to remember that they got the story wrong when the next day is the next apocalypse. And that's what they do. You wake up every day, you go on the internet, and you are told, here is the catastrophic state of play. Putin's going to launch nukes. China's going to take over the world. The recession's about to hit. Trump's going to get back in power. Whatever it is, you're told today's the most important day of your life, and you must act and you must be afraid. And you haven't got time to worry about the mere pifflings of whether or not a journalist lied to you for the 40th time this year. So they get away with it. They hide behind it. The mechanism is designed that way. So I don't think Matt Taibbi is a right-wing nut job, and I certainly don't think he's a respecter of wealth or a bootlicker. You can make your own assessment about him, but he's got a body of work that a lot of journalists would kill for. So when they were criticizing him, it sort of like didn't sit right with me. But I'll also just add, when you see reporting like this, and this is what they did in the aftermath of Twitter files number one, how can you take any journalist that's covering this? And by the way, most of them want to ignore it and have been up until today. How can you take any of this seriously? This is Verge reporting on it. Elon Musk's promised Twitter expose on the Hunter Biden story is a flop that doxed multiple people. Did you know it doxed multiple people, guys? Did you know that? Did you see when I went through the tweets how it doxed multiple people? Well, it didn't dox multiple people. They're fucking lying, and they're openly lying. Like, do we all agree that doxing is when you put public information about, like, someone's, you know, address, you know, something that you wouldn't be able to gain access to that could put them in harm's way, and you make it public, right? That's what doxing is. Look at the lie they have told compared to the reality. Free speech crusader Elon Musk isn't happy with Twitter's years-old decision to suppress a news story about Hunter Biden's laptop. Look at that opening sentence, by the way. Like, free speech crusader is a pejorative, right? I thought saying things like social justice warrior is a pejorative was an incredibly, like, dinosaur thing to do, and very blasé and outdated and outmoded. And yeah, we should be fighting for social justice. What's wrong with you? Free speech crusader Elon Musk is a pejorative. Isn't happy with Twitter. It was years ago, guys. Just get on with your life. As if it has no relevance to where we are in the here and now in the political landscape. It's a mad loaded opening sentence. In an effort to restore public trust in Twitter, Musk indicated last month he would release internal communications showing how it all went down. That arrived Friday night in the form of a lengthy and arduously slow tweet thread. It took a full 2 hours to complete from journalist Matt Taibbi, who Musk appears to have leaked the documents to and coordinated for his findings to be posted on Twitter. Taibbi's thread includes screenshots of emails between Twitter's leadership, members of the Biden campaign, and outside policy leaders. At one point, there's even a confidential communication from Twitter's deputy general counsel. The emails show Twitter's team struggling with how to explain their handling of the New York Post story that brought the news of Hunter's leaked laptop files and whether they made the correct moderation decision in the first place. At the time, it was not clear if the materials were genuine. This, by the way, is the most outrageous lie that's repeated. It was the only people who were saying it wasn't genuine were disinformation agents from the Democrat Party. There is no world in which a critically thinking journalist could look at the evidence and arrive at the conclusion that it wasn't genuine, you know? Nonsense. But they keep saying it. Twitter decided to ban links to or images of the post story, citing its policy on the distribution of hacked materials. The move was controversial even then, primarily among Republicans, but also with speech advocates worried about Twitter's decision to block a news outlet. While Musk might be hoping we see documents showing Twitter's largely former staffers nefariously deciding to act in a way that helped now President Joe Biden, the communications mostly show a team debating how to finalize and communicate a difficult moderation decision. Musk seems to read the events detailed in the Twitter files as proof of government meddling. If this isn't a violation of the Constitution's First Amendment, what is? He wrote in response to one leaked email. By the way, I don't think that is a fair characterization of what was shown in it. But the email appears to show the Biden campaign, which is not a government entity, flagging tweets to Twitter for review under the moderation policies before the election took place. Taibbi says there's no evidence that I've seen of any government involvement in the laptop story. Yes, in the laptop story, very specifically. But certainly, in multiple documents, as we'll get to as part of this, and in multiple internal discussions, Twitter executives admit to having regular meetings with the Biden party, with the FBI, and the CIA, right? So why do you need to have regular meetings with these people about your moderation policies on your platform? Seems a bit weird. Meanwhile, Taibbi's handling of the emails, which seem to have been handed to him at Musk's direction, though he only refers to sources at Twitter, appears to have exposed personal email addresses for two high-profile leaders, Dorsey and Representative Ro Khanna. An email address that belongs to someone Taibbi identifies as Dorsey is included in one message, in which Dorsey forwards an article Taibbi wrote criticizing Twitter handling of the Post story. What appears to be Khanna's personal Gmail address is included in in another email in which Carter reaches out and criticised Twitter's decision to restrict the post story as well. That's the doxing, guys, in case you're wondering where we were going. That's the doxing. Email addresses. Is publishing someone's email address? Has that ever been the standard of doxing? Ever in the history of the internet? So, a Twitter executive who no longer works at Twitter, having his personal email, we have no idea whether it's his personal email or not, being leaked into the public, and a public servant, a Democrat politician, having a Gmail account linked. A Gmail account he was using to communicate in an official capacity with Twitter, which, by the way, probably shouldn't be happening. Like, I don't know enough about the rules, but it seems to me if it is actually a personal email and you're talking about government business, you probably should be doing that on your official government email, because that's what they're for, and that's what enables it to be tracked. So I don't know, maybe they're bad. Right? But I have never in a million years heard of someone's email address being the standard of doxing. That's it. That was the personal info. That's the headline. That doxed multiple people. Two emails. That was The Verge's take on it. That's how they reported it. And this is how you know they're just disingenuous, lying hacks. They will try and twist and make everything sound way worse than it actually is. It's nonsense, the whole thing. There was also, again, lots of pushback on whether Matt Taibbi had made a deal with the devil, because he was very transparent in what he said. He said, I was allowed to publish this on Twitter, have access to these documents under certain conditions, right? People immediately assumed the conditions must be bad. By the way, journalists, I've said this before, I'll say it again. You agree to conditions to have access in just everyday journalism all the time. You might interview someone and they might say, don't talk about that. That's just a generally, that happens all the time in journalism. Is it something I do? No. Is it considered unethical? Not really. All sorts of good. An embargo is a condition. You agree to an embargo. Here you go. Here's the press release. You get your shit written up, but you can't release it until Friday. And by the way, if you jump the gun and break an embargo, you will never get a press release or any access ever from that company ever again. Even though, you know, you should be getting it out there. I mean, think about this. With the Brittany Griner story that everyone's been talking about right now, at least two news outlets said they knew for a week that the deal had been done. A deal had been done to give back a Russian terrorist arms dealer in exchange for a women's NBA player who clearly had broke the law, by the way. Like, she just went to another country and broke the law. That was it, you know? Like, well, got to get her back. Got to appeal to the base. Can't leave her overseas. So at a time when what we're meant to be doing is stopping Russia from having, you know, any advantage in the conflict in Ukraine, here you go. Have a fucking former arms dealer who immediately went on Russia Today and immediately started talking about how weak and pathetic Americans were and how Russia would prevail in Ukraine, right? So how anybody could think this administration's doing a good job and want to vote blue at the moment, I don't get it. Like, I think you're fucking out of your mind. There's also a new story today unrelated to anything we're going to talk about here. $396 additional per month than this time last year the average American family is going to have to pay. I mean, they've fucked the economy. they've fucked everything. They've fucked oil production. It's mad, but whatever. You know, no more mean tweets. You win, I guess. So anyway, the point I'm trying to make is they had former knowledge about that and agreed to, with the government to not report on it lest it jeopardise the deal. And I don't know. Seems to me the kind of thing you might want to report about. People might want to know about that guy, that arms dealer terrorist dude getting the fuck out of prison. You know, people might want to know about that. But nope, they sat and waited until Brittany Griner was on a plane. And, you know, you can also say, yeah, maybe you shouldn't jeopardise the deal. Maybe Brittany Griner should be coming home. I don't want her to rot away in a Russian prison, by the way. Not for low-level cannabis offences. I think their laws are unconscionable. But the fact still remains. I was brought up in a time when I was told all the time, if you go abroad and you break their laws, you pay their price. So respect the country you're in. That's how I was raised. But, you know, America, what are you going to do? Anyway, there was other ridiculous pushback like this. This was the bulwark, of course. Obviously, the Never Trumpers over there. This was their lead in their article about the Twitter files. While normal humans who denied Republicans their red wave were enjoying an epic sports weekend, an insular community of MAGA activists and online contrarians, led by the world's richest man, for now, were getting riled up about a cache of leaked emails revealing that the former actor James Woods and Chinese troll accounts were not allowed to post ill-gotten photos of Hunter Biden's hog on a private company's micro-blogging platform 25 months ago. Which, again, that's just not really... That's the most uncharitable interpretation of what happened ever. There's some aspects of truth to it. I don't entirely hate the write-up, but if you can't see how this type of thing matters and how governments and big tech and other and journalism all working together in a kind of state media kind of way like they have in North Korea and China, yeah, you can't see where that what kind of totalitarian dystopia that can lead to if unchecked, then I question your intelligence, frankly. But that's how they decided to go with it. Tim Dickinson, a senior writer at Rolling Stone, brought back the Joy Reid talking point, resurrected that one, and said, if Musk is willing to weaponize internal Twitter privileged and confidential docs for political purposes, imagine he might do with y'all DMs. You know, he likes, got to appeal to the masses by saying y'all. And then somebody helpfully posted a picture of Elon Musk as a clown, the ultimate insult on the internet in 2022. And of course, there's a world of difference between saying, I run a company, here's some internal emails around very contentious decisions that were publicly lied about, let's clear this up, to here's your private DMs. Now, by the way, Musk is selling your data. Of course he is. All of these sites are. As soon as you sign up and you put in all your geolocation nonsense, where you're from and all that stuff, yeah, of course he's fucking selling your data. Of course he's wrecking you. 100% he is. By the way, Musk is the guy who says Twitter DMs should be encrypted. Biz Stone, who was a former co-founder of Twitter, went with, he's not a serious person, talking about Elon Musk. He does things for sports that have serious consequences for real people. This is an open global service. US politics is not much of Twitter. K-pop might be bigger. Also in other places, lives are at stake. And of course, we're back to that. Oh, if he tells the truth about Twitter, lives might be at stake, you know? Just not utter nonsense. Sea journalists, again, repeated the talking point. It was a nothing burger. Lol, this is so weak, they said. You had that. And see, this is Molly Young Fast as well. Another regular of Enemy of the People. I'm going to dinner now. Let me know what they find in Geraldo's safe, she said dismissively. Tom Coates, and also another popular recurring guest in Enemy of the People. I'm sorry, I'm just overwhelmed by how feeble this is. This is a discussion between people at a company about how to act responsibly, coming to the conclusion that the responsible thing is blocked this story. You can disagree with them, but there's no evidence of wrongdoing here. Tim Miller, Tim or DC, another one you'll have seen before. Matt Taibbi is very upset that the Biden campaign has the platform to take down some revenge porn targeting the candidate's son. I'm sure Matt would be totes cool with people tweeting out his adult kid's dick because they didn't like him and would not ask his buddy Elon to help. And of course, it's much, much more than that. No one really cares about Hunter Biden's penis. Everyone, of course, cares about the potential corruption collusion with the vice president at the time, his father. So, on we go. There were also a bunch of people went back and looked at the former head of Trust and Safety, Yoel Roth, who's been doing the rounds on a speaking tour and talking about how it's so sad and everything's so dangerous and January the 6th was the worst day of my life. And everyone's, oh, stunning and brave. Everyone's like totally about that, you know, the coup that never was. Loads of people went back and looked at his previous tweets. And remember, this is a guy who said, and you know, it was sent to fucking Congress, we absolutely don't operate with any political bias whatsoever, even though we are left-leaning. Well, I don't know. When you say things like people with customized car horns, like people who bring babies on transatlantic flights and Tea Party voters are pure evil, yeah, probably something you might want to get concerned about. You can also see he said Massive anti-Trump protest headed up Valencia Street. I love San Francisco. Remember, by the way, there was lots of violence at these protests that we're all just supposed to forget about, right? Because it's not convenient to, you know, talk. But basically, the only people who can be radicalized and forced to commit violence are fucking right-wing people, apparently. Left-wing people can't be. They're too smart. If you say something, like even like to the point of, you must accost them! Get the Republicans! Get them! You know, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't matter that someone goes to outside of Brett Kavanaugh's house with a knife and a gun and gets arrested, and when asked what he was doing there, said, I've come to kill Brett Kavanaugh. Certainly no Democrat politician, no Democrat operative, no journalist could ever have radicalized that person. It only goes one way. This is, again, we're updating our approach to misleading information about COVID-19 to address harmful conspiracies and other false claims about vaccinations. Enforcement of these update rules began, and this is, again, this is when they brought in, they called loads of things misleading at the time. That just simply weren't misleading. And he was the guy that pushed for the policy to be in place. You know, I'm not saying there wasn't misleading stuff on the platform at that time. Lord knows there was. We all saw the tweets saying colloidal silver cures it and fucking God knows what else. People were saying a low dilution of bleach put on a pipette and squirted up your nose. Like, fuck me, guys. Sort it out. We obviously had all the fish tank cleaner nonsense and, you know, there was misinformation being spread on the platform. But equally, people who were saying, oh, you know, something like very basic, like AstraZeneca's been linked to an increased, you know, clotting disorder. People were getting banned for saying that. And it's in science. One of the most prestigious periodicals in the scientific field. It's there now. That's just an article saying we need to find a replacement for Twitter. The search for Twitter's replacement is intensifying. The New York Times did a write-up as well about Matt Taibbi and the Twitter files. Nice little hit piece. Here it is. The central role of Matt Taibbi, a polarizing figure in journalism circles. Did you know that this respected journalist who's written anti-Trump books and been working for decades abroad, overseas, done coverage, worked at Rolling Stone, worked at prestigious papers. He was a divisive figure the whole time, guys. I didn't know. Once a major voice of the political left, Mr. Taibbi rose to prominence by presenting himself as an unencumbered truth teller. He's perhaps known, best known for labelling Goldman Sachs a vampire squid in an article that galvanised public outrage towards Wall Street. But his commentary about former President Donald J. Trump diverged from the views of many Democrats. Actually, how dare he? For instance, he was sceptical of claims of collusion between Russia and Mr. Trump's campaign. How dare he? How dare he point out that all of that Russia collusion stuff was utter bullshit. Utter bullshit. Utter bullshit that people still believe. Li Fang, one of the good journalists, still working at The Intercept, he pointed out that the story is big, yo. Yoel Roth, Twitter's former head of site integrity, said he was in regular meetings with the DNI, FBI, DHS, Department of Homeland Security, etc. throughout 2020, and during these meetings, he was explicitly told about the Hunter Biden laptop before the story came out. And that's on FEC documents that you can get. So he's already said it to the government, that they were in regular meetings with these entities, the Department of Homeland Security and everybody else, all these other operatives. So why are we pretending that that's not there? Similarly, Li Fang took an extract from those documents, and you can see FBI agent Elvis Chan, the best fucking name I've ever seen for a Fed. Elvis Chan at San Francisco field office for the agency testified that he was in regular contact with Facebook Steven Seagal, not Seagal. Right, it's too mad. Elvis Chan and Steven Seagal, for fuck's sake. And Twitter's Yoel Roth. And here we go. For Facebook, says Mr. Chan, I would typically talk to Steven Seagal. He's a director on their attorney side. Question. Anyone else at Facebook that was involved in the meetings with congressional staffers? He would be the one that I would talk to about that. And he, for some, that's what I recollect. And specifically, he was involved in those meetings, right? He led me to believe that he was involved in those meetings. Probably not just him. How about Twitter? What do you know who at Twitter was involved in these meetings? I would have discussions with Yoel Roth or Angela Scherer. How do you spell Angela Scherer? And then he spells it. After all of the abuse and the heckling and the barracking, Matt Taibbi did come out, by the way, doubled his Twitter followers from doing it. He's now sat at 1.5 million followers. He'd be one of the most followed journalists on the platform now. after doing the first Twitter files. Going into it, doubled it. I mean, he had probably tripled it. He had about 500,000 followers. But anyway, Twitter Files Supplemental. On Friday, the first installment of the Twitter Files was published here. We expected to publish more over the weekend. Many wondered why there was a delay. We can now tell you part of the reason why. On Tuesday, Twitter Deputy General Counsel and former FBI General Counsel Jim Baker was fired. Among the reasons, vetting the first batch of Twitter files without knowledge of new management. The process for producing the Twitter files involved delivery to two journalists, Barry Weiss and me, via a lawyer close to new management. However, after the initial batch, things became more complicated. Over the weekend, while we both dealt with obstacles to new searches, it was Barry Weiss who discovered that the person in charge of releasing the files was someone named Jim. When she asked what Jim's last name was, the answer came back, Jim Baker. My jaw hit the floor, says Weiss. The first batch of files both reporters received was marked Spectra Baker emails. Baker is a controversial figure. He's been something of a zealot of FBI controversies dating back to 2016, from the Steele dossier to the Alpha server mess. He resigned in 2018 after investigation into leaks to the press. The news that Baker was reviewing the Twitter files surprised everyone involved, to say the least. New Twitter chief Elon Musk acted quickly to exit Baker Tuesday. Reporters resumed searches through Twitter files material, a lot of it today. The next installment of the Twitter files will appear under Barry Weiss. So basically, in case you don't know, Jim Baker, right, is like a fucking fed. And when he got fired from Twitter, all the journalists were defending him. Have you ever known a group of journalists defend federal agents ever in your fucking life? How are you speaking truth to power? Not to mention, as Matt Taibbi rightly points out, this guy's been at the heart of all the fucking anti-Trump propaganda. So, and was essentially installed, I'm going to say, as Twitter's lead counsel on all of this stuff. Just to remind you as well, in case you don't remember what the Alpha server thing was, because I know it's a long time ago and some of you won't remember, but the Hillary campaign, secretly using tech experts, attempted to pass off this fabricated evidence to a number of media outlets. We received the info and published a debunk of the Alpha Bank story. Nevertheless, tons of media ran with it. And basically, the Alpha Bank story were they claimed that Donald Trump's email was linked to, like, these Russian bank accounts and stuff. And obviously it all turned out to be garbage and bullshit. But it was being pushed to, again, sort of strengthen the idea that he was, in the pocket of Putin. Ben Collins, who will never not be in one of these, one of the worst. Not a Taylor Lorenz, but wretched and terrible in his own way. You can see here, Elon's team is just creating new main characters for Fox News to accuse of treason by implying they did some sort of high crime, but never actually saying what the high crime is. This is about creating pariahs to launch a mob against in order to, ironically, suppress their speech. You remember this from Hillary's emails, Podesta's emails, Benghazi WikiLeaks. It's the constant insinuation that secret emails must be nefarious because they're not public. It allows right-wing influencers to project whatever they want into the secret email mystery box. Previously, private citizens were collateral damage in these sort of info war campaigns. But now private citizens appear to be the very target of them. Random people inside a company they can blame for societal change they don't like, citing an email they think is too neo-lib. Now, the idea that this guy, Jim Baker, is a random person, right? This is his LinkedIn, right? Federal Bureau of Investigation, right? Distinguished Visiting Fellow at Lawfare, Legal Analyst at CNN, Director of National Security and Cybersecurity at the R Street Institute, and Deputy General Counsel and Vice President of Legal at Twitter. Just a random person. Nothing to worry about here. Certainly nothing to worry about in terms of, feds and media all getting nice and cozy together. Oh, we will certainly leak you some things from the intelligence community in exchange for a unbelievably high six-figure consultancy gig where I just get to come on like once a month and be an analyst and go, the walls are closing in on Trump for real this time. The walls are closing in. Thanks, Jim Baker. Thanks. Very fucking helpful. The PP tape is real. The his bank is Russian. $750,000 a year for that, thank you very much. And also, just so you can see the time of it, the timing of it, this is the original tweet announcing Jim Baker joining Twitter. Thrilled to welcome Jim Baker. You can see it's in June of 2020. He's our Deputy General Counsel. He'll be keeping an eye on things now that the good guys have won. Hits against Elon Musk's personality were also being thrown at him. Twitter targeted women for layoffs under Elon Musk. A new lawsuit says Twitter has been hit with another lawsuit stemming from the recent purge of half its workers. This one says the social media company disproportionately targeted female employees for layoffs. The proposed class action filed late on Wednesday in San Francisco federal court said that after Twitter was taken over by Elon Musk, it laid off 57% of its female workers compared to 47% of men. Well, that sounds incredibly disproportionate to me. Such a big margin has to be a purely sexist and misogynistic action. The BBC weighed in with a big scoop. Oh my God, how evil is Elon Musk? You won't even believe this. Avert thy gaze, James Clayton of the BBC here. The BBC has obtained pictures of inside Twitter rooms that have been converted into bedrooms for staff to sleep in. The inhumanity of it. The city of San Francisco is going to investigate as it's a commercial building. Musk has even installed a wardrobe. We're told he regularly sleeps at Twitter. There are even slippers. This is real. Former staff say Elon Musk's room is a converted conference room and looks like a hotel room. There are also multiple pictures of sofas set up as beds. Look, clearly lots of staff have been sleeping at Twitter. This apparently is a newly installed washing machine, so staff can wash their clothes. Oh my God, amenities, guys. Amenities. No, this is not satire. This is a genuine BBC reporter thinking he's made a scoop. It's mental. What's coming next, by the way, is suddenly the government's going to say, oh, Twitter is the public square and Elon Musk is bad, and we should repeal all the 230 protections. Maybe only for Twitter, but we'll... you know, because it's the public square, there is going to be an absolute 180. It's already happening, right? So Adam Schiff, Shifty Schiff, notorious liar, guy who still says, by the way, Russian collusion was real. Never been held accountable for that. Adam Schiff here. On Elon Musk's Twitter, slurs against black people have tripled. Slurs against women are up 33%. Slurs against Jewish people are up 61%. And slurs against gay men are up 58%. These numbers are abysmal and unacceptable. Today, me and Representative Mark Takano, we're demanding action, right? Now, there's a thing called Birdwatch. I've talked about it before. And Birdwatch, basically, is a thing that... we'll just go to the front page of Twitter for a bit. Look at this. What's trending? Huns. Beyonce. World Cup. Band 7. Great. It's a great time to be alive. But anyway. Birdwatch is a sort of... It's like those things where they go additional information. There's a group of select users that get the correct stuff and add additional context underneath people's tweets against the tweeter's will. Okay? And so these numbers that Adam Schiff has said, which, by the way, how can anyone get these numbers? Just think about it. Who's got access to Twitter's data? How are they scraping it? By what metrics? Over how long? Right? This tweet refers to research by the Center for Countering Digital Hate, who analyzed the number of tweets containing hate-related content. Twitter measures the impressions that harmful tweets receive, and Elon Musk has stated impressions of hateful speech have declined since he took over. Now, I do just want to point something out. Let's have a look at this group, shall we? The Center for Countering Digital Hate. Let's have a look at it. Let's look at their about page, right? You scroll down, let's have a look at their leadership team. In particular, why don't we look at this chairman of the board, right? Chairman of the board, Simon Clark, is a resident senior fellow. I mean, by the way, it's based in Washington, okay? It's a resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council's Digital Forensic Lab based in Washington, D.C. Simon chairs the Center for Countering Digital Hate, US and UK. He's director and former chair of Foreign Policy for America, the advocacy organization for principled American engagement in the world. He was a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. That name's familiar to me. Oh, What's that? Well, let's finish the sentence. Where he led their work on combating violent white supremacy that informed the White House's domestic terrorism strategy in the Trump years, right? Well, that's interesting. The Center for American Progress. Been around a long time. Been around for nearly 20 years. Let me just have a look at this. Let's just go here. Center for American Progress on Wikipedia. Let's have a look at its details. Oh, look! It's John Podesta! It's only bloody John Podesta that created this group. Fucking hell, what a mad coincidence that is. Oh, and it's only Neera Tanden that works there. Oh, interesting. She used to work there as well. She's over at the White House now, I think, with the Biden administration. Crazy. Used to work with the Clintons. She said crazy, crazy stuff. So I don't know. These numbers must be fucking genuine. There's no way those guys would lie about it. There's no way a group stocked with DNC operatives would tell a fib about Elon Musk. I mean, it looks pretty fucking genuine to me, guys. Anyway, we get onto the meat of this video. Part two of the Twitter files came out, and obviously there was much screeching. Because Barry Weiss, you'll remember her, right? Barry Weiss went from being in that journalistic clique set to being essentially ousted by the new wave of journalists that came into her newsroom. She was anti-Trump. She was maybe slightly conservative in some of her opinions, but she was anti-Trump. She was very critical of Republican policy, and certainly in the Trump years. But it wasn't enough, because it's never enough. So she got forced out of her newsroom and went independent, and she's killed it ever since. And now she gets to write stories she wants and gets to call journalists out on their bullshit with a bigger platform than they had. They fucking hate her. They seethe about her. I've even called her out on episodes of the podcast I've done, episodes Enemy of the People. She might have been in there. She's totally capable of fucking hysterical stuff. She ain't no Jennifer Rubin, but, you know, she's certainly capable. But she's in a much better place now with doing better work. So here we go. The Twitter files. I should have got the fucking X-Files music. Actually, shouldn't do that, because last time I did that, Griff edited it, and we had put it up on YouTube. I lost all the money from the video. All $50 that I would have got went to the guy that made the X-Files music, so got to be careful with that. Anyway, Twitter's secret blacklists. A new Twitter files investigation reveals that teams of Twitter employees build blacklists, prevent disfavored tweets from trending, and actively limit the visibility of entire accounts or even trending topics, all in secret without informing users. Twitter once had a mission to give everyone the power to create and share ideas and information instantly without barriers. Along the way, however, barriers were erected. 3. Take, for example, Stanford Dr. J. Bhattacharya, who argued that COVID lockdowns would harm children. Twitter secretly placed him on a trends blacklist, which prevented his tweets from trending. And you will recognize this. You will recognize this screen. Because remember the story when them crypto Bitcoin hackers managed to gain access to like Trump's account and think fucking maybe Musk's account and a bunch of celebrity account, Biden's account, and they fucking put that out there? Well, here it is. They had all these buttons and labels and tools they could use. And it was really inconvenient timing, because Twitter had just been in Congress saying we don't do shadow bans. And then it's like, well, what does trends blacklist mean, I wonder? Could it be they're on a blacklist to ever trend? Weird, that. Sort of seems like you're artificially suppressing what they say in secret for your own reasons. Now, Jay Bhattacharya, you're going to say, oh, but he must be a COVID misinformation peddler to have done it. So he probably says things like vaccines don't work or whatever. No. He just wanted to get kids back into school as quick as possible. He was a bit dubious about masking policies. He was a bit dubious about vaccines for the under 10s. But more importantly, what he complained about was lockdowns and kids not being able to go to school and how it would do psychological harm to them. That was it. That was his mad controversial views. That was it. And for that, he was on a trends blacklist. You tell me how that's fucking normal. And I do want to just make a broader point. And it's one that's not popular, and it'll probably get clipped and used out of context and say I'm an anti-vaxxer or whatever. But it has got to be said, so I will say it. And it's this. I'm from a time when misinformation, okay? This is what misinformation about COVID should be. Misinformation about COVID is some nutcase with tinfoil wrapped around his head says if you take colloidal silver till you turn purple, you can't get COVID. It's going to hurt people. It's going to harm people. Now, sure, you can argue there's a Darwin effect. Who the fuck would believe it? That guy's got no qualifications. That's misinformation. I'm happy if you want to take action against that misinformation. Not happy, but I understand it, right? What isn't misinformation is somebody who is a fucking doctor of 20 years with a fucking PhD and doctorates and loads of research papers that have all been cited in respected credible medical journals saying, I disagree with the consensus. It is not on you, a fucking Twitter pleb, to talk to him, a man of science with qualifications you will never get. You might not like what he's saying, it might not go with the narrative, but the robust discussion within science is great minds with scientific expertise disagreeing. That is not misinformation. You are not in a position to call that misinformation. You should not be censoring that as some tech wanker with fucking blue hair, right? The end of that discussion. And anyone thinks otherwise, you're a cretin. Dan Bongino. You will have no doubt seen the incredible work of the Dan Bongino show. You can see here, this guy, obviously, listen, he's sort of a shock jock, right wing, you know, one of those guys, provocative dude. I don't even know what this is. Stopped from having a notification spike. He's on a search blacklist, you can't even find him. He has the not suitable for work label on. By the way, if you don't know what that is on Twitter, they can now just make it so your account is not suitable for work. It literally says, this contains, like, shocking adult content. Do you want to see it? You have to click an extra button to see the tweet. And those tweets are de-indexed, right? Obviously, it's got nothing to do with not being suitable for work. He just says conservative things. I'm sure a lot of them bullshit. Twitter set the account of a conservative activist, Charlie Kirk, to do not amplify. You can see he's had a recent abuse strike, he's had notification strikes, he's had multiple accounts, even though the strike counts at zero. Do not amplify, also in the not suitable for work view. Twitter denied that it does such things. In 2018, Twitter's Vijaya Gaddy, I've now realised I've been pronouncing her name wrong in all the other videos I did, because I thought it was Gadda, but it's Gaddy, like Gaddy, it's like that. Vijaya Gaddy, then head of legal policy and trust, and Kevon Rekpo, head of product, said we do not shadow ban. They added, and we certainly don't allow shadow bans based on political viewpoints or ideology. What many people call shadow banning, Twitter executives and employees call visibility filtering. Ah, our old friend manipulation of language again, or VF. Multiple high-level sources confirmed what it means. Think about visibility filtering as being a way for us to suppress what people see to different levels. It's a very powerful tool, one senior Twitter employee told us. VF refers to Twitter's control over user visibility. It used VF to block searches of individual users, to limit the scope of a particular tweet's discoverability, to block select users' posts from ever appearing on the trending page, and from inclusion in hashtag searches, all without the user's knowledge. We control visibility quite a bit, and we control the amplification of your content quite a bit, and normal people do not know how much we do, one Twitter engineer told us. Two additional Twitter employees confirmed this. The group that decided whether to limit the reach of certain users was the Strategic Response Team, the Global Escalation Team, so S-R-T-G-E-T. It often handled up to 200 cases a day. But there existed a level beyond official ticketing, beyond the rank and file moderators following the company's policy on paper. This is the Site Integrity Policy, Policy Escalation Support, known as SIP PES. This secret group included Head of Legal, Policy and Trust, again, Vijaya Gaddy, and the Global Head and Trust and Safety, Yoel Roth. Subsequent CEOs, Jack Dorsey and Parag Agrawal, and others. This is where the biggest, most politically sensitive decisions got made. Think high follower account controversial, another Twitter employee told us. For these, there would be no ticket or anything. So, what they're saying here, that select group, which I told you from the start who it was, they got to act with impunity. They didn't even go through their own company's process, through their own channels. If a big follower had done something they didn't like, they discussed it among themselves, and like all moderators will eventually do in any setting, they will find the policy vague enough to make it fit so they get the outcome they want. They start with the outcome they want and work backwards. One of the accounts that rose to this level of scrutiny was Libs of TikTok, an account that was on the trends blacklist and was designated as a do not take action on user without consulting with SIPPES. So obviously, Libs of TikTok has been a hugely controversial account right from the get-go. And I don't like the Libs of TikTok account by and large. The person that runs it isn't particularly bright. I have no problem with a lot of the content she posts. Taking people's stupidity and holding it up should be fine. And obviously, the argument people make, oh, but you're platforming it and making more people see it than would have seen it ordinarily. If you're posting shit in public, it can go viral. And if you're saying crazy shit, like you're a teacher holding up a toy pig and putting a carrot in it and saying, this is how I explain anal sex to an 8-year-old or whatever the fuck, people are going to get upset about that in a civilized society. I don't know how to explain it to you. That is not going to go down well. And it's not just that. I mean, look, I think when you're posting teenagers that are attention-seeking by saying, you know, I identify as a dinosaur, you know, and all of that stuff that goes on, you know, it's nothing new. Teenagers have been seeking attention in different ways by going out to the margins of the extreme and testing the boundaries for as long as fucking teenagers have existed. This is just how you do it in this modern time. I think there's something cruel in encouraging people to be abusive to teenagers for being different when they're teenagers. They're not adults. You're bullying kids. It's bad. But for the adults and all the other fucking lunatics that say ridiculous things and make fools of themselves, you put it in public, motherfucker. These are the rules. I'll also just give you an example because I've never been able to fit it in. When I say the Libs of TikTok account is not bright, this is a deleted tweet. I've had it saved for ages, never been able to work it in. But I mean, it's fucking embarrassing. It's really embarrassing. Unable to detect even basic satire, like a boomer falling for an Onion article. This was a tweet that they put out, and you can see here, this is an article published in the Augsburg University School newspaper, and it's a headline that says, trans people should get 2 free murders. And she's tweeted it out, Newsburger. Sorry, mate, I don't know where that fucking get out, because I said Augsburger. Burger's on the brain, it's getting late, I'm hungry. She has said this is a serious article, and if you read it, which I know it's like an article for ants there, but if you read it, it's so clear that it's satire, you would have to be an idiot. You'd have to be an idiot not to get that it's satire. I'll just read it to you, and you tell me if you would not understand the broader point that's being made here. Transphobia is an epidemic of epic proportions. Trans people are subject to heinous treatment on all fronts in the legal system, in the healthcare system, in the educational system, and so much more. We are abused at higher rates, we suffer from mental illness at higher rates, we are assaulted at higher rates, and our oppression is justified, apparently, as we are branded as deluded by society. So, that naturally raises the question, how can we eradicate transphobia for good? If awareness campaigns and letters to legislatures have failed to create meaningful social change, there's only one path forward, murder. What kind of moron would you have to be to publish that and say, look, they're really advocating for murder? Because that's what Libs of TikTok did. So the idea that you're dealing with some sort of high-level thinker or anything and someone who's just not as, like, prone to hysteria is the very people she's impugning. Just a thought. Anyway, I'll bring up the, just so you can see. Because it's an account that's had multiple bans. There's been legal action threatened and yada, yada, yada. And remember, I'm not saying I don't think she should be suspended, but the idea that all of her tweets are just, hey, I'm just publishing what other people say, man. It ain't that simple. But you can see there, like, all the labels. It's a high-profile account. They flagged her as a high-profile user. In other words, be careful. She's also very active. She posts a lot. So be careful. Notification spike, trend blacklist, recent abuse strike, multiple accounts, 2 on the strike count, not suitable for work view, and other undisclosed censorship measures taken against that account there. The account, which Chaya Rychik began in November 2020, remember, we only know who it is because Taylor Lorenz essentially doxed her, which, by the way, I've got to say, if you're being retweeted by the press secretary of a major politician in America, and you might even be going so far as to be informing policy, you're now fair game, you're in the public eye. So I never got sad about the doxing, because I'm a journalist. I think that actually might be public information, because you don't know who this person is. But anyway, which Chaya Rychik began in November 2020 and now boasts over 1.4 million followers, was subject to 6 suspensions in 2022 alone. Rychik says each time Rychik was blocked from posting for as long as a week. Twitter repeatedly informed Rychik that she had been suspended for violating Twitter policy against hateful conduct. But in an internal SIP PES memo from October 2022, after a 7th suspension, the committee acknowledged that Libs of TikTok is not directly engaged in behaviour violative of the hateful conduct policy. See here. See there, site policy recommends placing Libs of TikTok with 1.3 million followers in a 7-day timeout at the account level, meaning not for a specific tweet, based on the account's continued pattern of indirectly violating Twitter's hateful conduct policy by tweeting content that either leads to or intends to incite harassment against individuals and institutions that support LGBTQ communities. At this time, site policy has not found explicitly violative tweets, which would result in a permanent suspension of the account. This type of enforcement action, repeated 7-day timeouts at the account level, will not lead to permanent suspension. However, should Libs of TikTok engage in any other direct tweet-level violations of any of the site policies, we will move forward with a permanent suspension. So in other words, they're not even breaking the rules. But if we keep suspending them for reasons that might stop, we might get them later. The committee justified her suspensions internally by claiming her posts encouraged online harassment of hospitals and medical providers, by insinuating that gender-affirming healthcare is equivalent to child abuse or grooming. Compare this to what happened when Rychik herself was doxxed on November 21st, 2022. A photo of her home with her address was posted in a tweet that has garnered more than 10,000 likes. Now, this I do disagree with. Somebody else posted a picture of where she lived on Twitter, which is a direct violation of policy that was already there. But, of course, because of who it was, Twitter reviewed it and decided it shouldn't come down. Because, remember, it's, you know, if you're one of the bad guys, you deserve to get doxxed and harassed and hurt and harmed. But if you say something that they don't like, well, words of violence all of a sudden. When Rychik told Twitter that her address had been disseminated, she says Twitter support responded with this message: "We reviewed the reported content and didn't find it to be in violation of the Twitter rules. No action was taken, and the doxing tweet is still up." In internal Slack messages, Twitter employees spoke of using technicalities to restrict the visibility of tweets and subjects. Here's Yoel Roth, Twitter's then global head of trust and safety, in a direct message to a colleague in 2021. A lot of times, SI has used technicality spam enforcements as a way to solve a problem created by safety under enforcing their policies, which again isn't a problem per se, but it keeps us from addressing the root cause of the issue, which is that our safety policies need some attention. So, translating it into fucking plain English, they would basically ban you for spam if you said something that they disagreed with and felt was a bit iffy, because their policies weren't sufficient to provide an accurate reason for that banning. Again, things that go on every tech website, by the way. These are not bombshells. This is exactly what happens. I've even talked about it before. It's the moderator spectrum. You start out, you say, yeah, free speech, everyone can say what they want. Then people start saying really awful shit. And you go, well, everyone can say what they want, but just not the really awful shit. And then you get rid of all the really awful shit. And then you're left with the not so awful shit. But it's not really nice. It might hurt people's feelings. Well, I better get rid of that then, because we want people's feelings not to be hurt. And you go, okay, we get rid of that. So now you've got rid of the awful shit, you've got rid of the not so awful shit. Now you're just left with the regular shit. And now, what do we do? What do we do? We sit around deleting all the awful shit and the not so awful shit. What do we do next? Well, here's what you do next. You have to think of something to do. You've got to justify all the management roles that people are in, all the great thinking, all the thought processes. Suddenly you start taking meetings to discuss policies, and suddenly you start saying, oh, well, should we ban this? And could this be perceived this way? And they constantly have to justify their existence. And so eventually you end up stripping off more and more and more, and the line keeps moving inwards till you have this really restricted field of conversation. And it's not based on that conversation being bad or dangerous or harmful. It is based on a need for the people in charge of what you can and can't say to justify their existence as the moral arbiters. And no moderators can resist. It's why I have said on my Discord every time, keep it simple. If you're ever in a meeting saying, should we have a policy about this? Or probably, you're probably turning into a dickhead. Bottom line is, if you see something and you know it's bad, just get rid of it. Get rid of it without a second thought. No problems. I trust you. Once you start that, someone's spamming the M-word or posting unsavory material, you just get rid of it. It's fine. No problem. No one's going to be upset about that. If you start having policies and going, this guy's saying these things and it's kind of implying behind the lines, and I think if you could interpret it this way, nah, fuck off. Fuck off. There's no need for any of that. Just keep it simple. That's all you have to do. Next up, another Yul Roth message. 6 days later, in a direct message with an employee on the Health, Misinformation, Privacy and Identity Research team, Roth requested more research to support expanding non-removal policy interventions like disabling engagements and de-amplification visibility filtering. He said, one of the biggest areas I'd love, even put asterisks around it, research support on is RE, non-removal policy interventions like disabling engagements and de-amplification / visibility filtering. The hypothesis underlying much of what we've implemented is that if exposure to, e.g., misinformation directly causes harm, we should use remediations that reduce exposure, and limiting the spread virality of content is a good way to do that by just reducing prevalence overall. We got Jack on board with implementing this for civic integrity in the near term. What's civic integrity, guys? Oh, it's elections. It's elections. This is Yul Roth of Twitter saying that de-amplifying certain things they disagree with is really good for civic integrity. I don't know. I think having equal access to information from both political parties should be a given in a democracy. Well, you know, it's just me. I'm a purist. But we're going to need to make a more robust case to get this into our repertoire of policy remediations, especially for other policy domains. So I'd love researchers' point of view on that. There is more to come on this story, which was reported by Abigail Schreier, blah, 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 and all the other people at the Free Press. The authors have broad and expanding access to Twitter files. The only condition we agreed to was that the material would first be published on Twitter. That is the big scandal that everyone was crying about. Elon Musk wants to turn Twitter into a content platform because that's going to be easier to monetize. He's also said recently he's going to totally change the whole point of Twitter to tweet, to put out a small little chirp into the world. And he's going to make the fucking character limit 4,000 characters, so there's no more need for Twit longer. I can't wait in esports, by the way, for the first player that blows up his career by doing a fucking, no longer a Twit longer, just going to be a tweet, a 4,000 character tweet, a manifesto on Twitter. We're just getting started on our reporting. Documents cannot tell the whole story here. A big thank you to everyone who has spoken to us so far. If you are a current or former Twitter employee, we'd love to hear from you. Please write to tips at the Free Press. And also watch Matt Taibbi for the next installment. And there's our man, Rust Cole, smoking loads of cigarettes, wrecked out of his mind, in the episode where he illegally goes undercover of True Detective and they have to rob a stash house while he's pretending to be a biker. Great times. Love that episode. So, again, is it spicy? Is it, you know, earth-shattering? No, but we're now starting to see a little bit more behind the curtain. And the things that you can establish from that are this. That, yes, absolutely, there was a censorship effort that seems to have predominantly targeted conservatives, whatever the fuck that means. It was kept secret for them. It wasn't transparent. By their own admission, Twitter were willing to not fall in line with their own policy and essentially ban people for not breaking the rules. It's there in black and white. And they wanted, as they move forward, to create a sort of secret shadow banning system to preserve what they call civic integrity, i.e. the elections. And the reason that this is, again, important is because, first of all, you can have debates about whether or not it's okay for a company to do that. That's fine. The fact that they've lied about it and essentially perjured themselves is not good. It's not great. right? Although maybe they're going to try and say, oh, but we don't shadow ban, we just do visibility filtering. But then the question comes, who are you doing it for and why are you doing it? And in America with the Constitution, yeah, there's some aspects that people are going to need to look at. You've also got to remember that, like, back in 2019, this is that what, like, mainstream media was saying about shadow bans back then.
Actually, Devin Nunes is arguing that he has had to endure, you know, slights, insults, you know, a way that nobody should ever have to deal with it. People making fun of him, people making crude jokes about him, and that all of this is essentially being enabled by the platform itself because they have it out for conservatives. So, you know, I mean, our laws protect parody, for example, if you're satire, right? You're making fun of some.
To be fair, this isn't the best example of a story. I don't support what Devin Nunes did. It's got to be said. There was an anonymous account called the Devin Nunes Cow that clearly had, you know, insight from his inner circle that absolutely tortured him. I mean, you can't even imagine everything he did, everything he said, everywhere he went in advance. Parodies, embarrassing him, wrecking him, humiliating him. And he tried to sue Twitter to essentially get the identity of the anonymous account that was making his life so miserable, and said that the reason Twitter wouldn't comply was because he was a conservative. And I didn't like it when fucking tentacle porn enthusiast Kurt Eichenwald somehow managed to get both Apple and Twitter to comply legally to give out an anonymous person that sent that flashing gif that absolutely did not in any way, shape or form lead to him having a seizure. I'll never believe it until the cows come home. It's so unbelievably far-fetched. Yet he did win in court over that after they found that guy's identity, and he was prosecuted for using a gif as a deadly weapon. Such are the times. But anyway, on it goes.
Somebody that is protected under U.S. law. This idea of shadow banning is something that he's brought up, which is essentially this concept that Twitter would allow you to post something, but then effectively make it invisible, make it not show up in searches. Right. This has been widely debunked.
The president, by the way, has tweeted about this idea of shadow banning, saying it's not good. We're going to look into this discriminatory illegal practice. He's tweeting about other tech companies just this morning as well. But as you point out, Twitter's like, dude, not so much.
Has been debunked by Twitter. They say that this is not something that they actively engage in. There was an incident where some prominent conservatives were not showing up in search. They claim that it was a brief glitch. But, you know, Devin Nunes, I mean, this, he has really kind of gotten, if there is a theory out there about how conservatives are being taken advantage of by the deep state, by Twitter, you know, Devin Nunes is right there for it. And
So one of the things you will notice as well, this outrageous trend of just, this is how you know how bad journalism has got, right? If two parties are involved in a dispute and they're making allegations about each other, right, you have to sort of pick through it all and very carefully and fastidiously research everything that's said. And if you cannot ascertain what is truth, you're obviously going to have to report it in the sort of like abstract, like, oh, he said this, they said that, that's the allegation, allegedly this is what happened, blah, blah, blah. Twitter, as a party in this dispute, and the journalist is going, yeah, that's been debunked by Twitter. You're meant to debunk it, you fucking melt. It's your job to debunk it. Only you as an independent can debunk it. Twitter can just lie to you. They can't debunk. They can deny. They can't debunk. It's on you. Fucking hell. Yeah, Twitter totally debunked that, man. No, they denied it. It's not the fucking same. Do your job. Sound like Roy Keane there. I'll also add, because I do try and be fair and balanced, and I've had a lot of comments. Look, the Twitter coverage hasn't got the most traffic. It hasn't made for the most engaging streams. Only the hardcore terminally online people stick around and watch this late in the night, and for which I'm incredibly grateful, and grateful to all of y'all on YouTube. Even though, by the way, you get the slick Zoomer jump cut edits and miss all the other fucking funny stuff that I say. So, you know, maybe come along to the Twitch stream every now and then. Stop slacking. But I'll say, because I'm fair and balanced, right? Here's the aspect of it that's going to get problematic. Elon Musk has said he's going to continue the same policy, by the way, publicly. There it is. New Twitter policy. This is on November 18th, right? New Twitter policy is freedom of speech, not freedom of reach. Negative hate tweets will be max deboosted and demonetized, so no ads or other revenue to Twitter. You won't find the tweet unless you specifically seek it out, which is no different from the rest of the internet. Well, that's exactly what everyone's criticizing Twitter for doing. That's exactly what everyone's objecting to. For Elon to have publicly committed to that, and then the Twitter files, a month later, it's like, dude, like, do you even remember what you say? You should probably shitpost less. Obviously, all the journalists have come out as well, and they all follow the same playbook, right? And the playbook is this. You say something's happening. Twitter's doing this. Blah, blah, blah. They say, no, it's not. You then prove it is. And they say, oh, yeah, but everyone knew. And it's not actually a big deal. And it's the same every time. Every time one of these things is, like, for years, they were saying, no, there's no shadow banning. Oh, boo-hoo, won't someone think of the fucking conservatives? Wah, wah, wah. There was a deluge of fucking people coming out now. You know, it's Ashley Feinberg, right? When Barry Weiss put this out, this has literally been on Twitter's help page since at least 2018. And it says there, we may take action to limit the reach of tweets. Yeah, everybody knew. Everybody knew, guys. Everybody knew. It's not a big deal. Well, why were you all saying it wasn't happening then? Barry Weiss is literally in the middle of breathless Twitter files thread describing Twitter implementing the exact policy Elon Musk said he was going to institute 3 weeks ago. It's a fair point. But what's also a fair point is you're denying, and have been denying historically that it ever happened. The big reveal about Twitter moderation. This is Tom Nichols, of course. Tom Nichols from the LinkedIn Project. Great. The big reveal about Twitter moderation is a classic death of expertise moment. People who didn't know about something until now assume not knowing about it meant that it was a huge secret. All right. It's out in the open, guys. Justin Barragona, the media's janitor, cleans up after them. You can see here, and this is from a Business Insider article. Now Weiss has been given access to Twitter's employee systems, added to its Slack, and given a company laptop, two people familiar with their presence said. The level of access to Twitter systems given to Weiss is typically given only to employees. Yeah. How else is she going to gain access to employee information, employee conversations, employee... What the fuck are you talking about? And obviously, shout out to Dutch Mate in the chat for spotting it. Yeah, they went and got a terrible picture of Musk. They're doing that thing they do with Trump, innit? Every time he's super orange, let's get him. Every time you see his fake tan line, let's get him. Every time he's doing that thing where it looks like one of them Torby jugs that's melting like in a fucking kiln. Yeah, let's use that picture. Also, everyone's been digging out, you know, you hoist them by their own petard. Again, this is Jack Dorsey. Who, listen, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I think Jack Dorsey, I don't think he's a bad dude, honestly. I think he was a hippie. I think he created something he couldn't have possibly foresaw where it was going to go. And I think he was all just checked out and couldn't be arsed with any of it. He just wanted to go and do acid, go out to the hills and focus on Web3. Because, you know, that's the next big thing. I think he seems to be a cool dude. I'd love to smoke dope with him, honestly. Like, but at the end of the day, this all happened on his watch. And he said some things that certainly are going to come back to haunt him just a little bit now.
President called you out for shadow banning. What is the truth around that idea?
So I think a lot of the statements behind the statement, the question behind the question is, look, shadow banning is a very widely defined term. There's not one single definition. So definition that we found that seems to resonate with the most people is, you know, not amplifying particular messages, or if someone puts out a tweet, hiding that tweet from everyone without that person who tweeted it knowing about it. So, but the real question behind the question is, are we doing something according to political ideology or viewpoints? And we are not, period.
We are not doing it, period. But again, these things only went predominantly in one way, right? Sorry. Looks like you're doing it. Charlie Wartsell waded in. He had some opinions. Man, it's all just Trump dynamics. Just a dude and dude underlings tweeting wrong or misleading stuff, spinning a distorted or wrong narrative for people and so many others, trying very hard to call bullshit or point out hypocrisy, but the intended audience doesn't care a lick. Wee! Interesting, my old chum. Seem to remember an article you wrote over at BuzzFeed. Twitter isn't shadow banning Republicans. Here's why. By Charlie Wartsell. uncritically repeating Twitter's response without any inquiry whatsoever. The next big scandal that came in between episodes of the Twitter Files was this. Oh, for fuck's sake. Elon Musk is threatening to sue Twitter employees who leak confidential information in the press. This is Zoe Schiffer, managing editor at Platformer. Have you ever heard of NDAs? Have you ever heard of an NDA? Have you ever heard of a non-disclosure agreement? I don't know. Never? No? Never come across them, eh? Weird. He's asking staffers to sign a pledge indicating they've understood. Here's the email. As evidenced by the many detailed leaks of confidential Twitter information, a few people at our company continue to act in a manner contrary to the company's interests and in violation of their NDA. Remember, by the way, every time I've said I don't like NDAs, I think NDAs are wrong, fundamentally, because if you want to leak something that a company is doing is bad, this is a type of contract that would prevent you, well, not prevent you from doing it, but allow the party that's doing the bad thing to have legal recourse against you. It makes whistleblowers afraid. But they're boilerplate language, and you shouldn't be afraid of them, Richard. That's what I've been told. I've been gaslit all the time. When I said, Riot having an NDA to go to their offices, just to go to their offices, just to walk in their building, sign an NDA to get in their building. Like, what is it? Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory, you mad cunts. What are you doing in there? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're just a games development company. Grow the fuck up. I say that. No, but it's standard, Richard. It's standard. Nothing to fucking worry about here. Like, fuck me, you NPC. Like, this will be said only once. If you clearly and deliberately violate the NDA that you signed when you joined, you accept liability to the full extent of the law and Twitter will immediately seek damages. Musk says occasional slip-ups are understandable, but breaking your word by sending detailed info to the media with the intent to harm Twitter will receive the response it deserves. Employees have by 5 p.m. today to respond. And then, trying to do a gotcha, sunlight is the best disinfectant. You know what I mean? Yeah, it is. But if you've signed an NDA saying, I'm not going to leak shit. A great meeting of minds also occurred. It's like the singularity of stupidity. David Hogg and Joy Reid. Whew. David Hogg, I tell you what, I'll be charitable and not give my opinion of that guy. Whatever. Musk can talk all he wants about bias at Twitter, but since he's taken over my timeline, it's been full of right-wingers who I don't follow. Am I the only person this is happening to? Yeah, probably other people are retweeting them, mate. Because they're allowed to finally retweet them. You're seeing their tweets for the first fucking time. Because they're not being suppressed. That's probably what's happening, right? Then, not just you. And that's the whole point. Musk wanted to turn this joint back into a place where right-wingers can start and harass people. He showed us that when he posted that green frog. Fuck me, Joy. Come on. It has to be a bit at this point, right? Surely. And there you have it. That was part two of the Twitter Files. Now, sadly, there is a part three and a part four. And there's also a separate journalist whose name escapes me having stuff leaked from the Twitter engineers. So it's not going to end anytime soon. And we've still got two sets of things to look forward to. Biden's administration is going to be up Elon Musk's ass. By the way, I saw an example of a tweet the other day. One of the things I particularly hate about the hashtag resistance on Twitter is when they say things that are like provable fucking... They're just there's no sources. They're just fantasies. And they're repeated without any evidence or sourcing. And they get like, you know, 300,000 retweets. I saw one the other day where some person, like, no qualifications, not a journalist, no sources, no nothing, literally said, this just in, breaking. And they use language like they're journalists, and they're not. This just in, breaking. High-level attorneys in the Biden administration will review Elon Musk's U.S. citizenship application, and if he lied, he will be deported. It's like, that's just you fantasizing about something you want to happen. You got no sources. You're not a journalist. You got no evidence. It's just embarrassing. Yeah, here it is. This is how you become famous, essentially. You know, for the resistance grifters, all the fucking grifters. This is Erica Marsh, right? Who the fuck's Erica Marsh? Proud Democrat. Former field organizer to elect President Biden. Volunteer for the Obama Foundation. Gen Z. So what she means is, right, she volunteered to go door to door for Democrats, probably with aspirations of a career in politics. Almost anyone who works in politics starts as a volunteer on a campaign, right? That's it. So she's not connected to the campaign, you understand. She went and handed out fucking flyers, right? And breaking, who are you to break anything? Who the fuck are you to break anything? You're not a fucking judge, you don't break shit, you know? Prominent attorneys are investigating whether Elon Musk lied on his application for US citizenship. If it shows that he lied anywhere on the application, it's likely he could be stripped of his US citizenship and deported. Just a lie, just a fabrication, right? 26,500 likes, 4,000, over 4,000 retweets, 3,000 people quote tweeting it. Ooh, we're going to get him. We're going to get the new Trump, the new bad man. Fucking pathetic. And you know what? To Elon Musk's credit, that's not deleted, is it? I like the new Twitter. I like where we're at with the new Twitter. I like the Twitter files. I like what's coming out. I like the thought that there's going to be consequences. I like the fact for the next 2 years, it's going to be an insane bloodbath with the Biden administration going after Elon and the Republicans in the House trying to have all these committees, and they're going to pull all these motherfuckers up in front of them and they're going to play back to them. Here's what you said in 2018. Here's what you said in 2019. You said shadow banning didn't exist. Why did you lie? Respectfully, Senator. It's going to be that. Respectfully, Senator, that's not an accurate characterization of what we said. We, in fact, included publicly on our policy accounts that we might limit the reach of certain tweets if they were harmful. It's going to be that.